and welcome to the 187th episode of The Week with Roger, a conversation between analysts about all things telecom, media, and technology from Recon Analytics. I'm Don Kellogg, and with me, as always, is Roger Entner. How you doing, Roger?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's finally warm in California.
It's still cold in Boston.
Well, you know, I'm just going to say best coast and move on.
Hey, how was your solar eclipse?
My solar eclipse? Partial.
Well, there you go.
But you know what? Like, we've got sun here, so I'll take it.
We'll finish with my solar eclipse.
Yes. Let's hear about it. I want to hear about it. So this week we had some pretty interesting news. Charter announced a new anytime upgrade plan, which, as named, allows you to upgrade your device anytime. So the difference here is that all the kind of frequent upgrader plans at, I think, every other provider require you to pay off at least 50% of the device. And so this is a pretty big deal from an upgrade perspective if you're kind of a device hound. And the other thing they announced was they are dropping their device insurance fees to just $5.
Yep.
Which is pretty significant when you think about almost every other provider's device insurance is in like the mid to high teens. So that's a big deal as well.
Yeah, if not higher, right?
Yeah, if not higher. So I want to get your reaction to both of these. I think they're both pretty significant.
Well, let's start with the device insurance for $5. A, it's pretty radical, right? $5, low price. I think how they can do this is to forego their share of the insurance fee that gets charged to consumers. Our rule of thumb is that about half of that fee for device insurance, half of it goes to the insurance provider and half of it goes to the carrier. What's really interesting is the device insurance provider is also typically the device trade-in provider. This is a virtuous circle when you combine the two, and is a major profit driver for the device trade-in / insurance provider. So this is like connected. When I look at the cable and wireless part, they're either a really good prepaid provider or a really bad postpaid provider. Because they're somewhere in between. Their customer bases are much more balanced than anybody else. And so that also, you know, mirrors in the device portfolio that they have. Typically on postpaid, it's very heavy iPhone and light on Android. And on prepaid, it's the other way around. And also the cost of the devices on prepaid is lower than that on postpaid. And with that, I think they can bring this down because the devices are cheaper and that you're insuring in aggregate.
Well, they're largely not subsidizing devices as well, right?
And they're not subsidizing devices.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the anytime upgrade plan. Charter is not subsidizing devices. So this lets you upgrade from one device to the other and lets you continue to pay your financing. So this, in a way, you know, lets you upgrade anytime, but it also lets you continue to pay your device financing fee basically infinitely.
Right. Well, presumably your schedule for paying off your device resets every time you upgrade, right? So
yeah,
if it's a 2 or 3 year plan, let's call it a $1,000 device, you have it for 6 months, you upgrade again, you're back to, you know, another 24-month agreement for a $1,000 device.
Yeah, you pay whatever.
Meanwhile, the residual value of that device you just turned in is still pretty high.
Yeah.
And then they turn around and give that to the Assurian or whatever kind of...
Well, whoever the trade-in...
insurance trade-in partner is, right? And manage to make it okay. I think the key here is not subsidizing the device, right?
The key is not subsidizing the device. And what gets really interesting is it increases the volume for everybody involved and increases the volume of devices sold. It increases the volume of devices traded in. And one of the interesting things about the trade-in business from the business side is that the more devices they get into their system and that they then ultimately sell to somebody else, the more devices, the higher the revenue they get from selling these devices. So if you have, say, 1,000 iPhone, whatever, 12, right? You get a lower price from somebody than if you sell them 100,000 devices or 10,000 devices, because it's a lot easier to put a program around selling 10,000 or 100,000 phones than 1,000. So there is a lot of that going on. And we talked about Charter is like this, looks like a hybrid to us. This helps them open up a new customer base of people who are much more focused on rapid handset upgrades. And when you look at it, say you are on Charter, you become a new customer, two lines is $50, $25. Even after the year, it goes like $5 higher, right? If you add to that then the device fee, you are roughly where you are or below of where you are with one of the MNOs, right? And you have a new device every year, because you're not going to switch around from Apple to Samsung to Apple to Motorola and then back in a rapid fashion. The way this plays out ultimately is you're a fan of whatever device it is. It gets upgraded every year and you will upgrade every year. So yes, I always say here, like, you know, Americans love their theoretical freedoms. But in reality, it's not a theoretical. You only upgrade once a year.
Well, I mean, there's a bifurcation of the market, right? There still is a group of people who want the latest and greatest every year, and they're willing to pay for it. And all the carriers have programs associated with this, kind of tuned to the 50% payoff, right? But they're subsidizing devices, right? So like by taking the subsidy out of the equation, you no longer have to worry about making your money back, right? And so that allows people to upgrade at a higher cadence if they want to. But as you know, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, I'm a big device fan. I love new devices, everything else. Like, but the devices are less exciting year over year than they used to be.
Yeah, the marginal difference is more.
Yeah, the marginal difference is not as great. Even if you're chasing after things like Geekbench scores or things like that, what last year's iPhone can do compared to this year's iPhone or last year's S23 Ultra versus this year's S23 Ultra is not that meaningfully different. Most folks are probably okay with a 2 or 3 year device replacement cycle. For the folks that want something at a more frequent cadence, I think this is a good plan. There is one catch, and that's that you have to have internet with Spectrum. When we look at cable just in general, and it's not just Spectrum, it's also Comcast and Cox, DOCSIS 3.1 technology on internet does tend to have, as we measure it, you know, a little more issues than like a fiber or even FWA.
A lot more issues.
A lot more issues, yeah. So you've got to live with that, right? But as long as that works for you, it's a pretty good deal.
There are some people for whom cable works really, really well. And they are probably the ones who will get the mobile side, right? For the people for whom cable does not work very well, they might not also pick up on the mobile side.
Well, I also think it's interesting from the perspective of, you know, you talk about cable kind of sitting in between postpaid and prepaid in terms of the customer profile. Frequent switchers probably are a little closer to prepaid in terms of like what that base looks like. You know, we talk about prepaid kind of losing out to postpaid over time. This is another kind of inflection where, you know, I would expect to see some of those frequent switcher type archetypes that are on the border between whether or not they want to be postpaid or prepaid, moving over to postpaid so that they could take advantage of more frequent upgrades.
Yeah, and I think Verizon will be probably the most impacted, right? Because everybody and their brother knows it runs on the Verizon network, and now I can have the Verizon network and a new phone every year for roughly the same price. I thought it was interesting that T-Mobile, like 2 days later, came out with a new press release touting their prepaid to postpaid transition, and that you then can have the same postpaid free device every whatever time period, but it's a lot more money, right? And then you have to do the math if it makes sense.
And T-Mobile even said this in their press release, right? Is the credit score in terms of like how likely you are to pay off your device versus walk is just as good of an indicator as bill pay history, right? So
yeah,
if you pay your bill on time for 24 months, no matter what your credit score is, you're probably not going to walk away from that, right? So that's kind of the stance they've taken, is that you don't need to have this long established credit history, which is great, particularly for people who are first entering the market, that are, you know, 18, 19, getting their first device. You know, T-Mobile is willing to take a chance on you, and it's not that much of a chance because they've read the numbers on it, right?
Well, yeah, when we look at who has poor credit score, there's two groups, right? Thin file, meaning people who don't have a history, And for them, the credit score is probably not that meaningful, and payment history is a lot better or more important. And that's what we see here. And then we have
people with the wrong history.
People who legitimately have problems paying their bills, and they have that credit score for a reason, right? You can do this right or wrong. The way T-Mobile is doing it, they're doing it right, because people don't wait for 12 months to screw you over, right? Whereas, you know, in the good old days, which were not good old days, right? But in the past, Sprint tried this twice and they took a bath because they thought like, oh, there are a lot of people who have poor credit score because the world is unfair and they got a rough deal and whatever. So let's give them credit. And these people took Sprint to the cleaners. When you do prepaid to postpaid conversion, the payment history is paramount. We talked about it. I did like, what, 20 years ago, this study with Convergys. And it clearly shows if people pay for 12 months in a row in a recurring payment, the default risk becomes independent from the credit score. And that's what T-Mobile is doing. Good job, right? Now, at the same time, this cable offer is also dangerous for them. Otherwise, I don't think they would have come out this week with it. You know, I think the industry is on notice, and it will be interesting. I would expect Comcast and Cox to follow suit. The question is when, but the cable companies are kind of working in sync, and Charter is probably the most innovative one of the three.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. You know, most folks that want to have a 5G device have it by now, right?
Yeah.
The networks, if they're going to build out 5G to where you are, probably have done it already, or they're probably pretty close, right? And so when you think about kind of why upgrade, is it, you know, marginally faster to processor speed, better resolution, or something else, right? Like,
yeah.
I think removing some of the friction for that upgrade process is probably a good thing, given that device upgrade cycle continues to decelerate as well.
Yeah, and talking about building out where people are.
So oh yeah, let's talk about the Eclipse.
Yeah, Eclipse was awesome. We drove up to Burke, Vermont from Boston. It should take 3-ish hours. Normally, it took us a little bit more than 4. We found a nice little place where there were seats. And strangely, the restaurant was closed. I'm like, this is like prime tourism day. How can you be closed? But I'll take the free seat. On the way back, it took us 9 hours. It was insane. And there was a traffic jam on I-93 around Franklin. And you can see like Mount Washington and Sugarloaf, which is like a ski resort. And then Google Maps says like, oh, there's 40-minute delay on I-93. We have a detour that's a lot faster. And so, fine, we'll take the detour. That detour was like Route 112 and 116 or the opposite. It was basically like 30 miles, like going around that thing. It was 30 miles going 5 miles an hour because everybody else who was using Google Maps was like rushing there. And there was no coverage in almost all of that 30 miles.
Right. So typically like the Waymo or Google Maps technology is going to see where there's congestion, where people slowed down on the radio network and then say, don't go there, right? But there's no coverage for anybody. And so it looked clear.
It looked clear, right?
Shout out to Google Maps for clogging traffic up on some random road.
Yeah, and I felt bad about, you know, there was like one woman, I saw her later because she was like for a couple hundred yards, she was like pulling out of the line and like going because it was 2-lane road, like back road, like eastern Vermont or New Hampshire, right? I've never seen a smaller but prouder town hall than that. Anyway, the lady drove back by and like you saw, she was not very happy as she pulled into her driveway. And went into her house. She probably was like, WTF, what happened here? And my commute home was like substantially longer. Well, my commute home was also, it took like 9 hours. It was insane. But yeah, thanks Google for doing that. It would have been better if I would have stayed on the interstate and whether the 40 minutes or whatever it would have been. It wouldn't have been 6 hours to get through that.
I think you'd have to wait another 20 years for an eclipse though, so... 9 hours on the road is probably, in North America at least.
In North America, the next decent or reasonably close eclipse is August 10th, 2026. And it's northern Spain
And Mallorca. I'm actually thinking about going to Mallorca for it, yeah.
And Iceland. Or you can walk the pilgrim path to Santiago de Compostela and see that. Or you can be on Iceland. Or in remote places on Greenland, which I think is probably the less.
Well, Iceland is fantastic. It's one of my favorite places in the world.
Yeah.
It's the most literate country in the entire world. Everybody wants to be a writer.
And they have genealogy back to before 600.
Yeah, they've coded the DNA of every single resident in Iceland. It's an amazing place. Amazing place.
Yeah. I know quite a few Icelanders. I used to play a game called Eve Online. And when a young man and a young woman meet, or even older, and they feel attracted, they pull out their app and they check if they're related because of the naming convention. But that one friend, when he goes back in genealogy, it literally says in his family tree that for one of the first ancestors, one of them was a troll. I'm not sure if they're trolling or if it actually was a troll,
yeah.
You know, one of his ancestors. So anyway, I think we'll finish with that. And Icelandic genealogy, it's a fascinating topic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we're glad you made it back from the eclipse. I know it's a once or several time in a lifetime type experience. I know when I went to the one in 2017, it was pretty fantastic as well.
Yep. Second eclipse for me.
We'll talk next week.
Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.